Let's go to page 139. That's where we are in Gary's book, Critical Semiotics. Here is a paragraph that I say smacks of tactility. So a philosopher, John Protevi, in a book called Political Physics, 2001, page 59, provides a helpful analysis of Derrida's deployment of force and signification, separating force from oppositional couplings, that'd be like dialectics, and thus contrasting difference with difference. Now, I don't expect you to get what that means, but separating force from oppositional couplings, that's the idea. Love is a force field, a field. Protevi directs us to a master metaphor. Force and signification interweave in the signifying field of difference, whose radical alterity is anathema to metaphysical oppositions. End of brackets. Recall Jean Baudrillard's critique of metaphysical elements of signification that gave the illusion of being rid of force. That's in that bracket. Active force is neither located in a meaning-giving act of a transcendental subject, nor by metaphysical oppositions that apparently lack force, or are presented as if the hierarchies they contain are natural. Differential signifying force undermines so-called stable and neutral oppositions, which are called signifier slash signified, or involve those two terms, as well as inherited hierarchies of the philosophical tradition, such as speech versus writing, or speech slash writing, interiority slash exteriority, sensible slash intelligible. And in these ruptures release new possibilities in which grammatology overtakes semiology with the liberation of graphic substance and the neutralization of phonological substance. Well, this is probably too obscure. But I have a second quote on tactility. Second, there is an imminent, that means pervasive use. The shift here is not from one to both at once, but through an affirmation of more than both through the maintenance of disjunction, either or. Then it refers to characters in a novel. One character is not both doctor and god, friend and enemy, at the same time, but more than both. If by both is suggested a resolution of some sort, in brackets, synthesis of contradiction, resolution of contraries. Instead, there is an affirmative hyphen disjunctive proliferation, an opening out, a release of ors without restriction. Quote, this is free disjunction. The differential positions persist in their entirety. They even take on a free quality, but they are all inhabited by a faceless and transpositional subject. Unquote. A subject who drifts, perhaps flies over among the ors, and the ors are either or. For Deleuze and Guattari, these flights are inscribed on the body without organs. For Lyotard, tensor signs bring into existence the libidinal skin, but with one exception, no inscription. And they quote from Deleuze, no, from Lyotard, no assignable site of inscription, only punctual incandescences without instantiation, unquote. And the intensities of the skin, which people think is a tactile organ, and the intensities of the skin are weakened by exclusive disjunctions. The tensor sign is aligned with the imminent use of the disjunction. It's worth underlining this. The question for Deleuze, Guattari, and Lyotard is not meaning, which is the search for signifier and signified. It is productive use in a montage of forces. Now, I'd like to hear a comment on that, what I read. Is there a possibility of a comment? What do you guys think?
Bob, I was just going to write down your last sentence, not meaning, but a constant. Your very last statement. I sort of saw the medium as the message.
Yeah, the question for Deleuze, Guattari, and Lyotard is not meaning. in brackets, search for signifier and signified. It is productive use in a montage of forces.
Excellent. And that almost sounds like the difference between the information and what you do with the information. Like wisdom, almost the productive use of this montage of forces versus just the meaning of things.
Well, juggling.
My grasp,
juggling. I can't comment on your statement. It sounds too...
that's in my head at that. Yes, yeah. Full of meaning.
Okay.
But every time I hear the word meaning now as well, I think of when you get the mean of a number and the process to get the mean of the number. You can almost simulate to us trying to get meaning out of things, but it will always depend on the different numbers.
Okay, so in this statement, it is productive use.
Mm-hmm.
It is productive use in a montage of forces. Go to page 142. Garriganosko says, let's review. And we were talking about tensor signs, and he says, tensor signs concentrate forces, focus intensities on scraps of the libidinal skin, but without assignable sites of inscription, in brackets, the skin retaining anonymity. The tensor signs generate singularities, induce vertigo, display ephemerality, incandes, escape from and exceed positioning in oppositions. Leotard eschews dialectics and presents no analysis of domination, sexual or otherwise. It is difficult to follow the fault lines between intelligent and intensive signs, Leotard admits. Why? This is not an opposition that is immune from intermingling. Intelligence does not betray intensity. It is not a safe and permanent shelter from the barrage of pulses and fluxes, affirmations and exorbitance of displays of intensity and libidinal charges. Leotard's effort to define a tensor sign returns energy to the sign as a carrier of intense singularities that burn brightly and dissipate at the same time. Quote, its syntactic ice must be its incandescence. End of quote. Communication and incomparability are herein confused. Leotard gives us an impossible situation. The meaningful communication of fluxes destroys them. The introduction of pulsional singularities into the law of value disables it. What's it? The meaningful communication of fluxes destroys them. That means fluxes. The introduction of pulsional singularities into the law of value disables the fluxes, I guess. Near the end of his book, Libidinal Economy, Leotard reflects, quote, must our fear of sign systems and therefore our investment in them be still so immense that we search for these pure positions? Gary says, yes. Conduct intensity, he says. Well, Leotard answered, yes. Conduct intensity, Leotard says. Invent nothing. Release or follow tensors. Yes, and yes again. Then Gary says, my selective reading of Leotard and the tensor sign emphasizes the importance of his creative approach to signs and his love and fear of linguistics, love and fear in quotes. His introduction of intensity / energetics into structure is a precursor to the challenge to signs posed by AFECT, AFFECT, which appears not to want to engage in any kind of semiotic dissimulation. In concluding this section of the chapter, I want to reflect on Leotard's earlier study of the linguistic sign in his book Discourse Figure as a more straightforward case of his ingenuity regarding Saussure's work. Okay, this is probably pretty obscure. But I'm reading quotes where I put in the sidelines, tactility. Now we have here one, the gap. Leotard seeks a positive interpretation of symbolical relations, not in the signifier-signifier relationship, in brackets, for the sign in Saussure, Mr. Saussure, is empty and has no interior, and its exterior is interior to the system of language. But Lyotard seeks a positive interpretation of symbolic world relations, not in the signifier-signifier relationship, but in the extensionality of reference, primarily designation, then this word deictics, like this tree, here, not there, now. In order to grasp, but in the extensionality of reference, in order to grasp that the, quote, the disposition of language induces upon words, and in between them, rhythms that resonate with those provoked on our body by the thing discourse speaks of. They resonate with those provoked on our body by the thing discourse speaks of. This argument is that's the end of that quote. This argument is a precursor to the tensor sign, as reference is itself a force tripped in the encounter with thickness and rhythmic space. Setting up his analysis in the zone between signs and things, Lyotard says, claims against Derrida that there is something outside the text in a border space, a worldly type of space, plastic and atmospheric, in which motivation exists. What is this? Setting up his analysis in the zone between signs and things, Lyotard claims against Derrida that there is something outside the text, in a border space, a worldly type of space, plastic and atmospheric, in which motivation exists. I have here a note, Finnegan's Wake. And the paragraph I put Finnegan's Wake beside, it says, a good example of variation within language may be seen in the proliferation of themed internet memes, with their humorous agrammaticality, no grammar, unattributed authorship and stylistic consistencies, not to mention irreverence and irrelevance. These carefully executed visual and textual knots contribute to the promotion of a machinic slang of emoticons, deliberate misspellings, and acronyms, and many initialisms. The agrammaticality of internet memes is not simply a contingent feature, a feature of speech, but places grammaticality in continuous variation, conjoined with amateur photography and favored typography, with identifiable procedures, yet without authorial attribution. Further, Guattari asked how signifying statements crystallize intensities. Multiple intensities, including both affective and libidinal, crystallize in signifying discursivity. However, this crystallization is not limited to the intersecting axes of signification and value. Do that again. However, this crystallization is not limited to the intersecting axes of signification and value in the Saussurean system. The very stultifying differences that affect theorists resist, while in addition flagging the impingements of numerous other structural delimitations in which Lyotard worked hard to complicate with tensorial flows. Okay, another stab at it. As I discussed in the first chapter, says Gary, Guattari presented the relationship between discursive, now that is space, time, energy, coordinates, and syntams, and non-discursive, which is pathic, affective, intensive. These two fields, discursive and non-discursive fields, Guattari presented the relationship in less oppositional than mutual imbricating terms. Imbricating, imbricating. That means overlapping. Somebody was talking about overlapping a little while ago. Fields, the relationship between discursive and non-discursive fields in less oppositional than mutually imbricating terms, with the proviso that it is characterized by two tensions. Small supplies of discourse exist in the pathic field, and they are used to discern modulate speeds, and self-actualize. So pathic life needs a certain amount of discourse, but because discourse wants to bracket pathic apprehension in order to pursue its own aims, namely denotation and locatable exo-references, pathic experience must marshal forces to divert discourse from these ends, finding new roles for it. But discourse may be said to, paradoxically, Guattari admits, may be said to rest on pathic experience, as well as all subjectification has a pathic foundation. Instead of binarizing them, Guattari creates a mutual imbrication. These are concepts that inform the distinction between signs and effects. Sounds a bit like Ion there. Thus, the semiotic is not a separate paradigm, but supplies the theorization of affect with the means to express encounters between bodies and communicate openness to the virtual potential of relations, even arresting, containing, and decomplexifying. It does not follow that the semiotic rests upon a foundation of affect, a pre-social and pre-linguistic bodily capacity to affect and be affected. There is no genesis, no early state to be regained and reactivated. Rather, the first curve in the turn is to rethink encounters, movements, and intensities before you think about rethink signification, code, and discourse. The asociality of intensity is more or less agreed upon, and chicken and egg questions are eventually abandoned. Refreshing the conceptual vocabulary to complete the effective turn means mixing it up in between semiotic and affective elements. This is not quite what Lyotard insisted on, producing meaning and intensity at the same time. It's bad to produce meaning and intensity, or it's frowned upon by some. But instead, moving in between them, not for the sake of the joys of aporia, but for that of pathically apprehending change and becoming in their own right. So this is advocating a perception, rehearsal of perception, about tactility, or about tactility, tactile phenomena. Now, I apologize for reading that stuff. I can't see it has anything for you, but this last section I have ioned annotated. So let's see what is ionic. This is called The Fate of Energetics. While Guattari, in his schizoanalytic cartographies, wrote of quitting the terrain of signifying interpretation for the alternative he proposed with regard to the study of the unconscious that focused on affects and time and techno-scientific effects. Now, McLuhan said technology was our unconscious. So the alternative McLuhan proposed with regard to the study of the unconscious that focused on affects and techno-scientific effects. That's the unconscious as part of an interweave of technology. However, Guattari, who tried this, it is evident that he didn't altogether leave semiotics in the process. Rather, he wanted to quit existing tendencies to create binaries and dualities, especially especially those arising from the assimilation of flows into forms, or the capture of matter by an imposed form that leaches out the specificities from matter in the name of a single economy of energy. That's a definition of ion. Does that bring forth any commentary? Want to hear that again? Rather, Guattari wanted to quit existing tendencies to create binaries and dualities, especially those arising from the assimilation of flows into forms, or also arising from the capture of matter by an imposed form that leaches out the specificities from matter in the name of a single economy of energy. I have beside that ion. Anybody see that?
Oh, yes.
I see the single economy of energy parts of it, Bud.
Okay.
And pure source, raw energy.
It definitely sounds like a good definition of iron, Bob.
All right. Then Gary says, Both Freudian and Marxian theory suffered from what Guattari dubbed an infrastructure complex, built upon the circumscription of givens by univocal energetics, such monotheisms of capital and libido. So, univocal is not a popular term. Guattari's solution is to pluralize energies and thus quit univocal versions of them. That's ionic. Guattari complained that Lacan substituted the signifier for libido, and as a corrective, he wanted to keep energies in the plural together with modes of semiosis. What he imagined was not a science that would detect a universal energy in a specific substrate, but an energetico-semiotics that could be diagrammed in terms of the interdomain relations of his quadripartite framework, here's your quadriphenia, made up of phyla and fluxes, universes and territories. And in this way, he could describe the levels of energy belonging to the entities arising from the interactions of four domains, which are existential territorial refuges, or existential territorial refuges, alterities of incorporeal universes, machinic phyla, material flows, effects between flows and phyla, and effects between territories and universes. Close bracket. It would be possible, he thought, to isolate and describe the quanta, minimal amounts of elementary packets of energy arising from interdomain relations. For our purposes here, suffice to say that Guattari's highly esoteric and inventive mixture of science and magical properties poses the solution of the energy signification relation with recourse to tensors that connect and mediate forces across ontological domains. Guattari's borrowing of terminology here is less about separating meaning from intensity, as in Lyotard's use of the term, and more about describing how entities pass between domains and in the process are transformed, but not beyond the laws. Well, the constitutive definitions of how entities are characterized and ways they are organized. Laws are the constitutive definitions of how entities are characterized and ways they are organized. And in the process are transformed, but not beyond the laws that they supposedly obey. The vectors belong, because of that, the vectors along which they are projected. I'll read that again. Guattari's borrowing of terminology here is less about separating meaning from intensity, as in Lyotard's use of the term, and more about describing how entities pass between domains and in the process are transformed, but not beyond the laws that they supposedly obey. The vectors along which they are projected and the charges they carry. Tensors in Guattari's usage also actualize and virtualize, that is, manifest a potential in the actual or potentialize a given by means of development. Unlike Lyotard, however, they are explicitly deployed to dissolve the intensity signification problems. And like Lyotard, Guattari introduced elements of movement and change in multiples, both quantitative and qualitative. Although Guattari retained some of the conceptual language of semiotics, for example, expression slash content or synchronic slash diachronic, his piling up of concepts and definitions around them, around what? Although Guattari retained some of the conceptual language of semiotics, his piling up of concepts and definitions around them, augmented by diagrams, makes semiotics vertiginous. I was thinking, I have a note here, that's ionic. Although Guattari retains some of the conceptual language of semiotics, his piling up of concepts and definitions around them, augmented by diagram, makes semiotics vertiginous. That's when ion goes into overload, information overload mode. Simpkins, an author, may have been right in his book Literary Semiotics in pointing out that Lyotard engaged in a critique of signs that was written in a caricatural register, or ironic or humorous register. By exaggerating the close, finite nature of sign play and the lack of progress and action in closed systems, by rejecting this effort as disturbing. Simpkins may have been right in pointing out that Lyotard engaged in a critique of signs that was written in a caricatural register by exaggerating the closed, finite nature of sign play, i.e. Lacan's version of the entire signifying chain as the mediating device of any possible reference, so that exaggerating the closed finite energy of sign play and the lack of progress and action in closed systems by rejecting this effort as disturbing. He leaves us in an unenviable and perhaps untenable position of trying to inject some movement into a largely static structure. Perhaps Masumi, another writer, was not altogether correct when he used the idea of multiplying by zero as a way of characterizing the intractable problem of getting change back into structure. The intractable problem of getting change back into structure. A place where nothing allegedly ever happens. Instead, if we consider Lyotard's example, recourse to division by zero is a more apt way of indicating that the signs becoming intense is also a case of its becoming more indeterminate and more open, that is, undefined. Although for some critics, and at times for Lyotard himself in accounts of his own work, this produces an error message, just as a calculator generates such a message when division by zero is attempted. The search for an intense sign remains a productive philosophical conundrum for critical semiotics. So they're looking for an intense sign. That definitely would be ion. An intense sign that remains a productive philosophical although for some critics, there's this error produced. Just as a calculator generates such a message when division by zero is attempted. The search for an intense sign remains a productive philosophical conundrum for critical semiotics. What is this? Reading that last sentence again. Although for some critics, and at times for Lyotard himself in accounts of his own work, this produces an error message. Just as a calculator generates such a message when division by zero is attempted, the result is the search for an intense sign remains a productive philosophical conundrum for critical semiotics. An intense sign. Let's see if Sarah has anything to say about that. Do you have any input, Sarah?
I'm very intense right now. I can't answer that.
Okay. You're punning on the of the tensors.
Yes.
Very good.
Possibly.
You were somehow
absolutely
multiplying
not, yes.
by zero. You're multiplying by zero as a way of characterizing the intractable problem of getting change back into structure, a place where nothing allegedly ever happens.
Yeah, that makes good sense to me, actually.
And if you take that and you apply it to Lyotard's example, then recourse to division by zero is a more apt way of indicating that the signs becoming intense, that action of the signs becoming intense is also a case of its becoming more indeterminate and more open, that is, undefined. So when you're not defined, are you freed up, Sarah? Are you liberated? I have a feeling of liberation.
I don't know how to juxtapose that against something else to know if I know what that even means. I know
right.
I don't always feel free.
Right. Well, I apologize for reading all that stuff. I don't think... you guys could take anything in other than hypersubjectivity, since it's based on a lot of reading beforehand and then maybe jargon points. But we said that before. Let's see. We got 8 minutes or 8 minutes an hour. How is everybody? Have we had enough of this deep stuff or not deep stuff, irritating stuff? Do you want to go further?
I just want to play musical instruments. I'm just waiting for the neighbors to wake up.
You're waiting for what?
For neighbors to wake up. I'm trying to be conscious of the structure that I live in, of all my neighbors. It's difficult because I'm always singing. I'm always pushing my control of my vocals, so I imagine they might perceive it as kind of strange, so I'm trying to consider them.
Are you saying you're trying to be quiet if they wake up and can't talk on the phone?
Correct. Correct. Well, no, I can be on the phone, but I have to keep my volume normal person, indoor voice. So right. When I'm singing, that's a problem, yeah.
Okay, well, I have another book here by Gary Ganosko called Remodeling Communication. So he goes through the history of cybernetic modeling or modeling of whatever the world thinks it is from 1945 on. He goes through the various key modelers, and he has a chapter on phatic dysfunctions, which I'm probably going to read because it's all about phatic communication. And what would be phatic dysfunctions?
Well, it's probably going to end up being phatic filters, but it's from someone else's perspective.
Yeah, and it's the disruptions could be what we call manipian.
Not today.
Yes. Bert, why are you saying Madeline's comment on your vacation, Bob? Where's the comment? I don't see any Madeline posts. Let's see, scrolling back. I don't see it, Bert. You want to retype it or give me another direction there?
You were asking him what he was laughing at, Bob, and that's his reply to you, what your question was.
Oh, do you remember what she said about her vacation? Oh, on my vacation? What did she say?
I don't recall right now.
Okay, so we need a little input here, or we can't go another hour.
Your vacation, how she gasped when she heard that you're going away for 3 weeks.
Oh, okay. That's what Bert says? No, but that's what you think it is.
That's what made him laugh. No, that's okay. What made him laugh.
All right,
when Madeline gasped.
Don't you always go away for several weeks right now? Each year?
Well, sometime in July, August, September, October. Yeah, generally in that area we take a break, it seems. So, nothing out of the ordinary.
Well, except the preparation leading up to that. That's not ordinary. It's extraordinary.
What is? The preparation leading up to it?
Mm-hmm. It worked.
It worked?
Yep, correct.
I don't know what you're referring to. Okay, so Michael and Nick, you want to hear more of what?
I can listen, Bob. It's challenging without being able to read it as well along with you, but I can definitely listen in.
Absolutely.
If you're going to continue to read.
Yeah, but I'm not getting enough feedback. You're just listening.
Well, a lot of it's incomprehensible, Bob. It's
right.
The kind of stuff that, you know, when you listen back in the archives, it'll click in more. But on first listening, it's very difficult. I find it very challenging.
That's why I'm trying to find quotes that might be easier to get. But unfortunately, I stumbled into an obscure area and took a while to get out. Well, I have different categories here. If I look at AP over AM, which we were talking about many hours ago, and then run through the quotes that I put that beside, let's see if that creates any kind of pattern. So, for AP, that's anthropomorphical over the Android meme, a sense that you are bigger than the media, even though if you actually get into analyzing that, it might be hard to figure out what you think you felt with that idea. But people are quite unimpressed by media. It doesn't stop them from being engaged and commenting on it, but they very easily say, all this communication ain't helping anybody. So, with that in mind, let's look at the first quote that I aligned with the AP over the AM. So, Holiday Sun, talking about vacation. Holiday Sun is thus stripped of a symbolic force by aligning solarity with an exuberance that must be acceded to in the name of loss. The sun is stripped of a symbolic force by aligning solarity or sunness with an exuberance that must be acceded to in the name of loss. Fundamental ambisexuality is reduced in the masculinity-femininity distinction to a specified sexual segregation, highly phallic and aggressive. And in the unconscious consciousness dyad, the former is individuated. That's the unconscious, rediscovered and self-controllable like a piece of private property that can be surveyed and fenced in. Meaning that, in the unconscious consciousness dyad, the unconscious is individuated, rediscovered and self-controllable like a piece of private property that can be surveyed and fenced. Yes, the way people talk about their unconscious sounds like that, like a pet that they can work on.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's 58.
Bob, it sounds like that book. There's a book called The Chimp Paradox. That sounds like that. Because it teaches you how to control your chimp.
Chimp.
Chimp, as in chimpanzee.
Right.
Yeah, like, so your subconscious is your chimp that you learn to train. Yeah. Very cool.
All right. And that would be the
It's a very popular book now under the... Yeah. It's very popular amongst the positive psychology people, that book.
Okay. But the
Train brain. Brain. Train your brain.
Brain drain?
Train your brain, like they say, you train your chimpanzee.